punk rock chemistry. But I don't know how to make cologne. Punk rock chemistry. But we'll just add some pheromones.
Hi, welcome back to the Neurobiology of Sex podcast. My name's Marina, and today's episode is going to be all about the mystery of human pheromones. The concept of human pheromones as the ultimate key to mastering attraction has been popularized in films like Ocean 13, where a main character uses a so-called pheromone patch to seduce a woman and steal her diamonds. And in cologne and perfume ads that promise pheromones as, I quote, an intensely sexually stimulating magnet for drawing young hunks in a bottle. But do human pheromones even exist? And if they do, is that even how they work? Later, we're going to sit down and talk with Tiga Brain, the innovator behind a new phenomenon known as smell dating. And then we'll look into a study done in humans to see if that magnetic effect holds up to some empirical scrutiny. But first, let me explain what pheromones actually are. Pheromones are simply chemical cues, important to communicating information like sexual maturity and availability, as well as facilitating mother-child bonds at birth. They are processed by the olfactory system, or an animal smell center, which is typically split into two subcategories. The journey of the main system begins when fragrant pheromone particles enter through the nose. This sends a signal through sensory neurons into the glomeruli, or nerve endings, of the main olfactory bulb. The bulb then projects the signal to its final destination, either the forebrain, which regulates everything from bodily function to information processing to reproduction, or the limbic system, which regulates emotions and drives. In the accessory system, on the other hand, an animal must make direct contact with the organism emitting pheromones rather than just smell them. This contact allows pheromones to bind to receptors in the vomer nasal organ, triggering neurons to signal the accessory olfactory bulb. This bulb's neurons project to the medial nuclei of the amygdala, which then relay the signal to the final destinations of the hypothalamus, an important regulator in hormone production, and again to the limbic system. Neither the accessory system nor the vomer nasal organ have been found in humans yet. Nevertheless, through these systems, other animals such as hamsters can learn of potential mates, gender, sexual experience, age, and more, to determine whether or not they should copulate. Think of it like Tinder, but all the information you need is smelled instead of seen. Actually, that's exactly how Tiga Brain saw it. Like I mentioned before, Tiga Brain is behind a new type of matchmaking known as smell dating. I'll let her explain it in her own words.
Smell dating is an online dating service. You sign up, you then are sent a t-shirt, you then wear the t-shirt for 3 days, preferably without deodorant. You send it back to us and then we cut up the shirts and then you get sent 10 anonymous samples from other people in your group, from which you can elect if you want to meet them, maybe, or you don't want to meet them. So there's a yes, maybe, and a no. And then any sort of mutual match or a yes and a maybe match get connected via email, and from there it just proceeds like a normal dating service. But when you do get the samples, you don't get any information about age, gender, anything. All you get is that sample, so you have to completely go off the smell and how you interpret that.
This project captivated newspapers and audiences with headlines reading, "I tried smell dating and it didn't stink," and "Love in the stenches." People were fascinated by allowing an underutilized sense to take over their love lives.
It's a scent we're sort of trained not to pay too much attention to, particularly like when you're sort of in our interpersonal relations.
When talking to my own friends about this assignment, they were equally adamant about human pheromones existing. They reported that pheromones simply felt like a good explanation for random attraction they've experienced. Sometimes magneticism for them seemed to go beyond just visual cues. We're attracted to this idea of there being literal chemistry linking us to another being, an order and science to the chaos we feel. But are pheromones really it? Tiga's work was about exploring a new medium of information rather than a study to prove the role of pheromones in attraction. However, several experiments did try to link the two. One study looked at the effects of the hormones androstenedione, AND, and estradiol, EST, on attractiveness. AND is a component of male sweat and semen, produced in the armpits and testes respectively. And EST is made in the third trimester of pregnancy in women. AND and EST supposedly signal gender to potential suitors. This would mean when a heterosexual individual is exposed to the alleged pheromone of their opposite sex, their body would understand that the scent is coming from a viable mate and attraction would ensue. The study examined this effect by asking participants to indicate reproductively relevant information like gender, attractiveness, and faithfulness when presented with gender-neutral faces. Each participant performed each of their ratings under both a neutral scent condition and one of the two pheromone conditions. They found no effect of either pheromone condition on any of the ratings. This contradicted several previous findings on how AND and EST facilitated both attraction and gender recognition. This inconsistency could be due to differences in sample or differences in naturalistic versus lab settings. The latter would make sense if AND and EST work with other pheromones that humans naturally emit rather than by themselves to signal mate compatibility. By making participants rate photographs rather than people, researchers had more control over extraneous scents than exists in most dating environments. Or possibly, AND and EST might not actually be gender-specific pheromones. In fact, AND was actually found in females as well, so whether they are gender-specific hormones at all is in question. And the reason scientists even considered AND and EST pheromones in the first place is sketchy. AND and EST were presented as so-called putative human pheromones by Monty Block and Grosser at a 1991 conference, which was sponsored by Erox, a fragrance company. Monty Block and Grosser gave no details on how AND and EST were extracted, identified, assayed, or determined to be putative pheromones, just that they were, which was enough to give Erox a patent on fragrances containing human pheromones, and to send researchers on a wild goose chase trying to see whether AND and EST actually signaled any cues of attraction. However, despite all these critiques and inconsistencies, scientists still believe that human pheromones exist, as we are still mammals. Evolutionarily, it would make sense for a process that helps promote reproductive success to be conserved. Nevertheless, if we want to find these pheromones, we must do as leading pheromone expert Dr. Tristram Wyatt suggests and start from scratch. Scrap AND and EST research, instead begin the search for pheromones through clear and documented steps. Dr. Wyatt recommends the following. First, use repeat bioassays to determine to what extent a behavioral or physiological response is mediated by a chemical stimulus from another human being. Bioassays are biochemical tests that determine a chemical's strength through its effect on living cells or tissues. Second, isolate, identify, and synthesize the bioactive molecules found in the bioassay. Third and final step, confirm that the natural concentrations of the proposed molecules are both necessary and sufficient to repeat the original response with the original bioassay. Until those steps are taken, I guess when it comes to human pheromones, who really knows? This has been Marina and the Mystery of Human Pheromones. We just want to get some chicks.